welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Gene KY2MY will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. Also, we have original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's technical puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange colored type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type the word puzzle.kwrc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members, as well as non-members, are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. By the way, as always, an application is always available on our club website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try my best to provide an answer, and Gene KY2MY will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please feel free to let me know either here or use our email address, tech@kc2rc.com. And now, I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Gene KY2MY. Good evening, Gene.
Roy, AC2GS. This is Gene, Q Yankee 2, Mike Yankee. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the technical net. Back to you, Roy.
Good, Gene. Okay, let us begin with the TechNet for tonight. If anyone would like to ask any questions or make any comments on the technical net, please, this is the time to give me your call sign and your first name.
E2NVB, this is Bob in Park Slope. Good evening, Roy. Good evening, Gene and Annette. I'm here on a rare occasion at Hope on Wednesday night, and I have a couple questions.
Very good, Bob. We put you at the top of the list. If anyone else would like to add their name to the list, this is the time to give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2RRO, Stefan here, checking in from South Park Slope. I have a couple questions for the net.
Okay, very good. You're on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? Okay, well, I guess we'll start with Bob, KD2NVB. What's your questions for tonight, Bob?
It's KD2NVB. Good evening, Roy. Good evening, Gene and Annette. Well, I'm just trying to rack my brain with some good questions to ask. I don't know if these are the greatest questions, but just recently, you may have noticed I tried to contact you on the 10-meter net last Sunday with I bought a mag loop, a chameleon mag loop, and as I suspected, it does not work well in my horrible Faraday cage apartment. So I'm determined to go out in the park and use it or somewhere. And just recently, because I have a knee injury, the reason I'm home, I'd like to have a light setup. And I noticed that the Yaesu 818ND, I think that's what it's called, has come down to $600. I was not even thinking of a tiny radio like that before, but I guess that's more of an opinion I'm asking. How worthy, I mean, it only has 5 or 6 watts, and like you're out in the park around here with a loop. I wonder if I could do anything with 5 or 6 watts. It sounds interesting, so I'm just putting that out to anybody who might have any opinions or information or about other radios of that type. I know the Elecraft KX3s, but they're considerably more expensive, it seems. And so it's just at that $600 price point, which it recently came down to. I thought it was $800. Starting to make it look a little bit appealing. So anyway, back to you, Roy, and the net.
Very good, Bob. Well, yeah, generally you'll get opinions from people. It's a very good piece of equipment. It's been around for a while. People have liked it. I haven't heard of any inherent flaws in it. It is what it is. It's a QRP, a low power transmitter, a receiver, transceiver. You know, 5 watts. Maybe you could squeeze an extra watt out of it. And for what it is, it's a very good value. The Elecrafts have more bells and whistles. It's a little bit more high-end electronics, but all things being equal, it's a good bang for the buck type of thing. Now, the problem is QRP operation. Usually, people who like to operate QRP, and there are many people, they go up to mountaintops, they go all over the place, and they travel light, and the QRP radio allows them to do that. In my experience, they tend to be more CW operators simply because you can get farther range on 5 watts using a digital mode such as CW as opposed to single sideband. So as long as you're not terribly optimistic about getting distant communications with 5 watts on phone, it should be fine. But you have to understand going into it, I mean, you won't have any problems getting a magnetic loop that will be able to tolerate 5 watts output of that transceiver. So that's a good thing. But you have to kind of decide whether or not you want to settle with a challenging amount of power. 5 watts is not a lot. It's fine for local communications. It's probably not going to do well as far as phone conversations outside of the metropolitan area, but I'm open for other people's opinions and experiences on the subject. I guess no one has any particular experience or opinions one way or the other. So did I answer that question, Bob, or were there other aspects of it that you're still wondering about?
Yes. Another side question to that is, it does have something over the Elecraft, unless, of course, you buy extra things for it, the Elecraft. It can do 2 meters and 440, and people talk about things like single sideband and AM on those higher bands. Is there much going on in that department? I know very little about that.
No. You're talking about an interesting field that doesn't really get a lot of press, especially these days with the poor propagation conditions of long distance 2 meter and 440 operation. Most people who use those frequencies, as you know, as we're using it today, are for repeaters. But there are a few people out there who run very esoteric Yagis, directional Yagis, pointed out at the horizon, and they run single sideband as well as amplitude modulation. There used to be a net, there probably still is, but I haven't listened lately, on, it's 105.000 Wednesday nights, I think it's 7 o'clock. They call it the Dinosaur Net. It's an AM 2 meter operation. Most of the people have terrible signals from MyQTH because of the propagation problems and the fact that they're taking a really big slice of RF to make those communications. But they do exist. And there are other people who are very fascinated with distant, low signal distance single sideband. But it's a bit of esoteric interest. And unless you have a decent directional Yagi, that's not really what most of the antennas that we have tend to be omnidirectional verticals. I have a GP3 and a GP6. They would be awful for that because you need a degree of gain and directionality to get to people on single sideband.
82 NVV. Well, Roy, I do have an elk log periodic, which is somewhat similar to a Riagi, I believe. And so there's that. So anyway, back to you.
A log periodic isn't exactly a Yagi. It's a slightly different design mentality. It has a little bit less of a gain than a Yagi does. Its reason for existing is because it's more broadly tuned, so there is a wider bandwidth that you could use it on. There is a degree of directionality, but you also have to think in terms of when it comes to UHF and VHF, height is might. So the higher you could poke it up, the much better it would be. So the elk is nice, and you could use it at on the ground to kind of point at a repeater or so. But again, I tend to think you're not going to get a lot of conversations on 2 meters or 70 centimeters in the single sideband or the AM phone frequencies with a handheld elk at ground level. But, you know, I mean, stranger things have happened.
Thanks, Roy. Just one more. This question is, this is my last one. I'll pass it on to the next person. And this is obviously completely speculative, but you wonder if with 5 watts, if I was in a place like Prospect Park, I'd have a chance in hell of getting to the 10-meter net at your place.
Ultimately, I guess it really depends upon the antenna efficiency. I thought I have heard people who have gotten onto the net operating as little as 30 or 40 watts. I don't think anyone has checked in and told me that they were running 5 watts alone. I don't know. When you and Malin made your forays, I don't know what kind of power setting he might have tried out. It would be kind of, I would assume it would be rather iffy for 5 watts on single sideband. But again, if the gods of propagation looked, you know, smiled upon you, there's no theoretical absolute that it wouldn't work. It's just less likely to work.
I was thinking with a mag loop, so that's probably not the most efficient antenna. Obviously not. So, probably no. when I tried to reach you from inside my apartment, of course, much worse conditions than the park, I think. I was actually up to 60 watts. So, that's the limit of this antenna. Okay, back to you. I guess that's it. Let's pass it on to the next station.
Comment? Good evening, Roy. It's K2JVX, Lloyd. Late check-in. I got on the 10-meter net once, maybe a year ago, I don't know if you remember, and I was using my Alex loop and my 817 at 5 watts. And I certainly could hear the net, but in order to actually hit you, I had to turn the loop so it was pointing at you. I had to manually keep twisting the loop and then, you know, point it at Joe's house, etc., to make it work. Over.
Very good. I totally forgot about that, Lloyd. Well, I mean, you really didn't have to change the angle that much between me and Joe because he lives a block away from me.
Maybe it was not Joe, Howard. Is he in line with you too?
Depends upon your angle. He doesn't live a block away from me. He lives in Sheepshead Bay. So, assuming that you were in a third area that wasn't in line with the two of us, I could see where you could have to adjust the loop. And once again, for the people listening, a lot of times people misunderstand the concept of a magnetic loop. They tend to think that the gain is directed through the opening of the hole, so that if you're trying to pick up a signal, you do it so that you can look through the loop, and that's the direction. But that's not the direction magnetic loops receive at. They actually receive at 90 degrees to that. So they receive on the plane of the loop itself. So if you're looking through the hole, you're 90 degrees off the direction of the signal that it's picking up. Also, magnetic loops are bidirectional. They receive just as well on one side of the loop as they do the other side of the loop. The nulls are in the middle where you can see through the hole. So that's my little 2 cents worth for magnetic loops.
Yeah, well, certainly that's the case. And I think the misunderstanding comes from like war movies where they're using it for the Nazis are trying to track down the French underground and they're using a loop on top of a van. And in fact, they're doing exactly the opposite. They want to know the signal and that's how they locate it, over.
Comments, any questions, anything?
I have a question back to the loops, K2JVX here. What differentiates a loop for receiving purposes? What makes one loop, one magnetic loop, a better receiving antenna than another loop?
The short answer is really nothing. The reason why magnetic loop antennas are sold either for transceivers or for receivers are basically due to the variable capacitor that's used in the circuit. If you're selling it purely as a receiving antenna, you can have a capacitor that has a breakdown voltage of a minuscule amount of power because you're not going to apply any power to it. Whereas if you're going to transmit, you have to conceive of what possible Q of your magnetic loop is. And the Q will magnify the voltage potential across those variable capacitors. And shortened magnetic loops have incredibly high Qs. They could have a Q of 30, 40. So you multiply the amount of voltage that you're putting into it, and you're going to arc a lot of capacitors. And so that's why the most expensive part of a magnetic loop is the variable capacitor, because it has to be built to tolerate the voltage on either end. And that could be in a massive one. And that's why you see that there's a lot of vacuum based capacitors, which are rather expensive. Usually people buy them used, so it doesn't cost them quite that much. But the idea being that vacuum capacitors have the highest voltage breakdown ratings of any other type of variable capacitors. So that's why receiving magnetic loops tend to be less expensive, less heavy, and transmitting ones can be gargantuan. There's a guy in Italy, Ciro, that sells for a couple thousand dollars this enormous thing that is enormous because it can take as much as 300 or 400 watts of power in the transmitter.
Yeah, I've seen that demonstrated at at Xenia. But still, what makes like a Wellbrook loop better than an Alex loop for receiving, setting the capacitor aside, or that other one, W6LV? You know, why would you spend $500 on a receiving loop? What makes it better?
Well, for the most part, nothing much. Nothing that wouldn't make it inherently a better transmitter magnetic loop also if you included the more expensive variable capacitor. The problem with magnetic loops is that they're very shortened loops, and some people think of them as basically a modified shortened vertical, half-wave vertical that's been shortened. A dipole. And so the radiation resistance of a normal dipole is about 73 ohms. So that's the resistance that the radiator of your antenna has. It doesn't produce heat, it produces RF, but as far as calculations go, it's 73 ohms of radiated resistance. As you shrink the dipole, the radiation resistance gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. The problem with that is the insertion losses of the transmission line and the connectors and what have you stays the same. So the current goes out of the antenna and into the other aspects of the antenna circuit, and you get greater loss. So if you invest a lot of money and time into designing a magnetic loop and you design it so that the insertion losses are minuscule, you improve the overall efficiency of it in general, but in addition, the efficiency as a receiving antenna. So I would think it's more along those lines, both mechanical strength and lower insertion loss. When you have these antennas that are built on solid, say, copper plating, they're probably the most efficient. The least efficient are the ones that basically use the braiding of a coaxial cable as their conductor. So that's kind of what's going on with the price differential.
I copy that. I agree. You know, it is probably just the physical properties. And yes, the LNR and the Alex loop all use the heavy braided cable, the LMR 400. And so, like taking a plumber's tubing, and you see these in QST and various projects with making loops out of copper tubing, and I think that probably you have a much better skin effect too. I would imagine the zero whatever the Italian loop is the diameter of that is like maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches. It's pretty profound. So that the bigger the diameter, I would imagine the better off it is too. Over.
Yeah, Lloyd, the bigger the diameter, the more solid and perfect the conductor, and the better it conducts electricity. Aluminum is okay, but copper is even better, and if you can silver plate everything, that would be wonderful. And especially since, again, we're talking about radio frequencies where the skin effect is very important. Most of the current that you're picking up and working with is not going through the entire cross-section of your metal of your antenna. It's really existing on the uppermost, a fraction of a millimeter. Some of them are micron deep currents that are running through them. So, yeah. There was even an article last month, QST did their antenna issue, and a guy used a waveguide, a conduit for a magnetic loop. It is basically, it looks like a rigid coaxial cable without the center insulation and the center conductor in it. And it's just a solid, I think, corrugated piece of copper running the whole thing. And he helically looped two loops of it to increase some of the qualities of the magnetic loop and lessen the expense he was going to have to pay as far as a tuning variable capacitor. It was a fascinating article. If you haven't picked up the antenna issue, you should take a look at it.
I perused it and I'm kind of intrigued and I'm almost tempted to do the project myself because it looks really kind of cool. And the variable capacitor is the big issue, as you say, for transmitting. And then you get into some big bucks, and the Italian loop has a gigantic mechanical capacitor with this logarithmic contraption that expands and contracts precisely the loop where it's broken at the capacitor, and it's kind of interesting. And I wonder how that system, if the one concern I would have for that is, does that mechanism really hold up year after year being on your roof? Over.
I mean, one of the good things, and not for you because you don't have any ground, magnetic loops are much more forgiving as far as lack of elevation, whereas we tend to speak of, especially UHF and VHF, where height makes might. And in the case of dipoles, where you have ground reflection problems, height also is probably a good thing to keep in mind, because if you place a dipole too close to the ground, the reflections will cause you to have basically what's called a near vertical incident sky wave, which sometimes is called a cloud warmer. It goes straight up into the clouds above you and doesn't really propagate well. But magnetic loops are incredibly more forgiving. You can elevate a magnetic loop only about 10 feet off of the ground and get probably just as good reception and transmission as if you elevated it above a roof. But I understand you don't have a plot of land to just plant it. But people who do have a backyard or something, that might be an option.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think loops really need to be explored more. I don't know, was there someone else who checked in? I just sort of cut in, over.
Right. Next on our list is Stefan. Welcome, Stefan. New to the club and new to the hobby. How can we help you tonight?
Yeah, KD2RRO here. Thanks, Roy. You're right, very new. I think my questions are going to be so much more basic than everything I've been listening to, but this has been super helpful and educational. I'm coming to you from the old Amazon special. I got just a Baofeng HT here with a Nagoya whip on top. So my first question is, am I coming in clear?
You're coming in clear. There's a little bit of a background hum. I don't know exactly what might be causing it. I assume that you're not operating with a power supply. You have a battery hooked up to your Baofeng. But you sound good, perfectly readable, nice strong signal, and don't feel bad about Baofeng. Baofeng was basically, I wouldn't say it was actually my third radio. My first radio, once I got my license, was my iPod, my iPhone, rather. And I got the Echo Link application, and I wandered around Echo Link and talked to people in Romania and such. So you got to start somewhere. Baofeng is a nice little radio. It should be a stepping stone, in my opinion. I've known a few people who kind of the end-all, be-all has been that Baofeng. I think that kind of limits you. That's like someone who discovers ice cream and sticks with vanilla for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, yes, sir. It's been a pretty good radio so far. I've been getting all the channels and been able to listen in to all the nets so far. So, yeah, so far so good. My second question, I guess, would be I've noticed there might be a little bit of a hitch, it sounds like, with QRZ. With the new CORS registration, my call sign isn't showing up there. That's something that they kind of register automatically, right? That's not something I have to input. When I run a search for my call sign, it says does not exist, and I haven't been able to really log in there yet.
I've noticed that myself. I thought it was just a minor glitch when I first, when you joined the club, and I saw your call sign, and I do what I always do. I went to QRZ and got nothing out of it. I figured that they were just slow at the throttle, but I did it again today just out of curiosity, and they still don't register you. I would personally kind of go to QRZ's front page, wherever that might be, find a email address, and knock on the door and ask them what's going on, because it's very nice to have your presence on QRZ. Some people don't do much with it. Other people write War and Peace on pages, and other people crow about the contacts that they've made. But I think at the very least, you should kind of check up their email address. I don't know it offhand. And tell them that something went wrong with their data merging, apparently.
Yeah, okay, will do. And I'll report back if I get an answer. I was pluming the depths of their forums, and it sounds like a couple people were saying that it seemed like, from their perception, the new call sign stopped rolling in with that new CORS stuff. I don't know how new the CORS thing is, but definitely my FCC registration came.
That's the nature of computers. You know, you change the format a little bit and it screws things up. So if that's the case, then there's a large number of other people who were involved, and probably they would like to know, because if they stop refreshing the database, it's going to impact upon the people checking out their sites, and you know, that I see no particular reason why they would want to tempt people into looking elsewhere. Right now, QRZ is a very nice go-to place almost every time I make a contact with someone. When I'm near the computer, which I almost always am, I check it out to see what goes on, and I look at their pictures, I read their stories if there are any, and it's a nice thing to have. So I think they would definitely try and help you on this one. Other questions, Stefan? Stefan, are you with us still? Has the battery given up?
You called it, lost you there for a second. I don't know where you lost me on the last bit there, but roger that on that QRZ email tip. I'll see what I can find out.
Very good. Good luck, Stefan. Let us know how things work out. I'll probably be checking every so often QRZ. Looking forward to seeing your name finally get entered there. If I was really obsessive compulsive, I would probably do a search for people that got a license around the same time as you and kind of double-check their call sign as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea, too.
Very good. Does anyone else want to check into the technical net tonight if they have any questions or if they have any comments? As always, we have yet another TechNet puzzle. It's listed on the page what TechNet puzzles are, and I'll just read it for the audience. The question is, a radio signal in the ionosphere will have the greatest range in a single bounce when it is returned to Earth from which of the ionospheric regions? The choice is A is the D region, B is the E region, C is the F1 layer, D is the F2 layer. So you got the D layer, the E layer, the F1 layer, and the F2 layer. So think about that for a while, and if someone checks in with another question, we'll get to that. Otherwise, we'll move on to the puzzle.
NVB, Bob, with another question if no one new comes in.
Well, Bob, the more the merrier. Give away. What's your question?
Just looking today and reading about 60 meters, the 60 meter band, which I already knew about before, and about the five channels and all that. And I said, well, how is it set up on my radio, which is a ICOM 7100? Well, I looked in the radio, it doesn't seem to have it at all. Is that, maybe I'll have to look through the manual to make sure, but where you usually pick the bands, it's like, 160, 80, 40, and on up. So I was just curious about that, too. Does, you have a 7100, does it do 60 meters? Do you just have to do something else? And in general, do radios have the 60 meter band? Back to you, Roy.
Newer models do, older models don't. 60 meters is approximately 5.3 megahertz. It's a very strange little band in that it's the only channelized band that amateur radio possesses. You know, every so often some poor guy comes up here from citizen band land and starts to talk about repeaters as different channels, and people make fun of them for that. But a 60 meters only has five channelized frequencies, 5.332, 5.348, 5.358, and 5.373, and finally 5.405 kilohertz. And I don't really know anyone who particularly uses 60 meters these days. It seems to be such a limited band. To go to the trouble of finding an antenna that's resonant for it, or maybe for the most part, probably people just tweak their antenna tuner. My Palstar can tune up a doorknob. Modern radios probably do. I can't say definitely that my 7100 does, because I've actually never tried it for that. I know my Flex does, but it sort of depends upon how old it is. 60 meters is not one of the original frequencies. It was a recent addition, probably something like 16, 17 years ago. So if you have an old boat anchor, it does nothing on 3.5 on rather 5.3 megahertz.
I was reading about that, and it seems like, I know, the early 2000s that it was first introduced, and I know that the 7100 came out in 2012, I believe, which would be considered a pretty new radio by the standard of that. I mean, it's several years after the 60-meter band. Anyway, I was just curious about that. I don't know how much I would use it. All right, thanks, Roy. Thank you.
Very good, Lloyd. Truly, I mean, I have probably poked around on 6 meters a lot more than I've poked around on 60 meters. I'm sure I went there, because I went on to every band that I could possibly go just to see how much I could stretch my little 6700. But it didn't leave me with any kind of warm, fuzzy feeling, so I kind of quickly went elsewhere.
I know my loop is supposed to be able to do 60 meters if I ever wanted to. It has an extending loop, you know, so it can go down to 80. So you can tune it for 60 as well. But yeah, maybe if I have a radio that can do it, I'll check it out. And I guess right now I don't have a radio that can do that. All right, back to net.
Bob, and also keep in mind that receivers are far more forgiving than transmitters. You can very easily receive signals on an antenna that has a 2 or a 3 or even a 4 to 1 standing wave ratio. And the front end of a receiver is incredibly more forgiving than the final amplification circuit of a transmitter. Don't transmit into a 4 to 1 VISWA, but you could probably receive on even a 5 or a 6 to 1 VISWA and get a decent signal. It depends upon the strength of the signal you're trying to receive.
I remember, I think HTs often receive on pretty bad SWR. Yes, okay, back to you, Roy.
One of the scariest things you can possibly do to a young amateur radio operator who has bought their first antenna analyzer is tell them to run the antenna analyzer on their Andy Talkie antennas. There's a whole bunch of reasons why the results are problematic, one of them being that the Handy Talkie and your hand holding the Handy Talkie is part of counterpoise of its antenna system. And a lot of HT antennas are not the most resonant things in the book. So you'd probably have just as much luck trying to put an antenna analyzer to the doorknob that I mentioned earlier than a HT antenna. So be mindful of that. Just be thankful if and when it works. Especially the little rubber duckies that are an inch or two are basically glorified dummy loads. They're fine if you're operating close by, but they have no particular gain. So something to keep in mind somewhere.
How much better do you think it would be with these, they call it the tiger tail? You know, you just droop a wire down. I guess it's basically a counterpoise.
It depends upon the design of everything. Sometimes all you need is your hand capacitance coupling, and that should be counterpoise enough. I'm always a little bit confused by the setups where you're not holding on to the handy talkie. It's kind of remotely operated through a thin control wire that has no counterpoise. So that probably would be a great addition to one of those setups. But you'd have to kind of test it out, see what kind of improvement in range a secondary counterpoise will add to it.
Okay, very good, Roy. Yeah, I think maybe I'll try it. I think there's there are YouTube videos. That's how I discovered the existence of such a thing. I think a lot of them just say you can just take some kind of not very big wire and just make one yourself and see. I can just see if it helps anything. So, all right, back to net. I guess that's it for me.
Very good, Bob. So once again, before we get to the TechNet puzzle, anyone else have any questions or comments for the technical net tonight?
QBIG, checking in.
Your call sign one more time, please.
Delta 2, Delta, India Golf. In here is Don.
Welcome, Don. Welcome to our little technical net tonight. Do you have any technical questions or technical comments tonight?
Sir, I just realized that it's the fourth Wednesday of the month, and being a member, I'd like to try and be a little bit more active, at least on the air. Hopefully when they get to a meeting, I'm out here in Massachusetts, but I enjoy TechNet most of the time just listening. I'm usually off doing something else, just wanted to check in and say hello.
Don, you're always welcome. If you have any questions down the road or just want to listen in, that's fine with us. We keep an archive of all these little technical nets for whatever they're worth. Soon after I get off the air, I will post it on KC2RC's website, and people can listen to it as well there. But welcome to our technical net, and we all appreciate people kind of interacting with the club. Each of us kind of helps the other, and we make it a better experience.
I agree 100%. And the TechNet archives are excellent, great resource. The website is done very well also. So, I want to say hello. I haven't been on in quite some time. Like I said, try and listen second or fourth Wednesdays when I can. But in the shack tonight, and just wanted to jump in and say hello. Thank you very much, Roy. It's a great little net and a great club. I really enjoy it.
You're welcome, Don. Whenever you're so inclined, drop by and say hello again. Anyone else have any questions or comments for the technical net tonight? Okay, we're going to do something a little bit different because I actually got an email in our little mailbag with a question. So we will address the question that was posed by club member Alan, KD2OMG. It was basically, he was talking about radio frequency waves, microwaves, Bluetooth, headphones, cell phones, Wi-Fi and such, and he wanted to know how does the frequency affect human tissue, and he wanted to know how does the little pattern of holes on the microwave glass prevent waves from getting through. So, we'll do a little dance about that. The nice thing about the radio waves that we use as hams and radio waves in general is that they are called non-ionizing electromagnetic waves. Sometimes, unfortunately, they're called non-ionizing radiation, which frightens people. But the bottom line is that at the energy level of radio frequency waves, there's not enough energy to kick up an electron. And so it doesn't ionize any gases, it doesn't ionize any molecules, it doesn't destroy your DNA, it doesn't cause cancer or mutagenic effects or what have you. The principal effect of radio frequency, as you've noticed in microwave ovens, is that they heat stuff up. They do this by the electromagnetic alternations affect polar molecules, so things like water is a polar molecule. There's a positive aspect and a negative aspect, and if you put it in a radio frequency field long enough and hard enough, you bounce it back and forth, up and down, and you energize its kinetic energy. Temperature is a different way of just saying average kinetic energy, and so you heat up water. And the way that microwave ovens work is they generate the same 2.4 gigahertz that your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth and a lot of your other gear use, and it excites the inside cavity, and all the water molecules heat up, boil whatever you're cooking. The reason why the grill work is that radio frequencies are curious things. Whether or not they can go through spaces, gaps in shielding, is dependent upon their wavelength. If the openings between the shielding are smaller than a wavelength, they reflect back into the cavity. And 2.4 gigahertz microwave radar ranges have a wavelength of about 12 centimeters. So you can imagine where a 1 or 2 millimeter gap that lets you see through the radar range is going to end up looking like solid metal to a 12 centimeter RF signal and reflect back. So that's the reason why you can have a kind of a grating on the window and you're not irradiating yourself and cooking yourself. There's been lots of studies of whether RF can cause problems, and the UN has reports where they suggest that very esoteric cancers in young rats are caused by the microwave frequencies, but they really haven't proved any of that. Principally what happens is RF heats things up. So the most important thing you have to worry about in your body that's a closed space that you don't want to heat up is your eyeball. So putting too much microwave energy in your eyeball and heating it up can cause problems, but otherwise you get the same thermal effect by walking out into the sunshine, plus the sunshine includes ultraviolet light, which is ionizing radiation and can cause cancer. So RF is probably a lot safer than a day at the beach. Anyway, that's my little 2 cents worth regarding radio frequency signals and the risk or lack of risk. You could develop RF burns because at the end of antennas there's high voltage potentials, and they can cause a really nasty burn. And you can heat up your body. Usually RF is a more of a surface effect. Most of it either gets absorbed or reflected by near the surface of your body. So it's not going to kind of warm up your liver, you know, more warm up your eyeball. So that's it. Unless anyone has any questions on this topic, feel free. Very well. No questions on this topic. Let me get to the TechNet puzzle. Once again, and I hope some of you guys will play. We don't take points off. You know, it's nice little just interaction among fellow hams. So the question is, given one single bounce off the ionosphere, so go back to the days of your geometry lessons in junior high school, you have the D layer, the E layer, the F1 layer, the F2 layer. Which layer do you think would give you the farthest bounce with one single bounce allowed?
K2NBB.
Bob.
I believe the F2 would be the highest of those layers, and so the thing's going to travel farther, so it's going to bounce farther. So I would say, I think it's choice D, the F2 layer.
Bob, it's relatively simple. Thankfully, for some odd reason, when guys were busy figuring out what the ionosphere is, they decided to not start with an A region, I guess because they figured that what if they found something below the lowest region that they knew of, which was the D region. So they decided to just start counting D and up. So there's D, and then above D is E, and above E is the F layer, and a lot of times during heavy ionospheric production, it separates into an F1 and an F2 that's even farther. So just like you learned in geometry class, you know, these are circles that are larger than the planet, wider and wider. So the farthest circle out there has the same angle of incidence, it travels the farthest distance back to the globe. So Bob was quite correct. If you can get an F2 layer, that's your best bounce for your buck.
Bounce for your buck. Okay. Kitty 2 MVB, back to that.
Indeed. Unfortunately, these days, with the dearth of sunspot cycles, we are not really seeing much more than the D layer. The E and the F1 and the F2 are fish stories to us at this point. We're waiting for the promised land of 4 or 5 years from now, when the next sunspot cycle will be close to its maximum, and we'll be telling stories to each other of how we talked to China on 6 meters and all kinds of fun stories. Anyway, that's the TechNet puzzle for tonight. I will post another TechNet puzzle for the next time, which will be April 10th. Does anyone have any further questions or comments for the technical net at this time?
KD2MVP, just a quick one about my mag loop.
Bob, you wanted to ask a question about your mag loop.
I have the Chameleon F-Loop 2.0 Plus, so it has an option to have aluminum. It's got aluminum radiators that are about an inch in diameter, as you were talking before. That should be better than the coax I was using when I was trying to talk to you on the 10-meter net. So I'm wondering, it's probably not going to be that much better, but I'm going to try it. So I wonder if you think I have a little bit more of a fighting chance. I guess I do. It's supposedly more efficient. So anyway, that was it.
Might as well try. Are you going to try this indoors or outdoors this next time?
Probably indoors, because to go outdoors, I'd have to schlep myself to the park with my stuff. It's going to be indoors.
I would again suggest that you direct the radiation of the antenna towards your window, and so hopefully a little bit less of it will get radiated into the chicken wire.
That's what I do. I turn it at, surprisingly, the best direction didn't seem to be towards the window, but I'm talking about for receiving, because that's the only thing I could gauge it by. But I'm totally new to this, so I may find a spot in my apartment also that's better than what I've found so far. It's going to be a lot of trial and error here. So, that's basically it. Back to net. I do know which way it goes, as you explained earlier.
Very good, Bob. I mean, I think I told you the story. I have a receiving magnetic loop that's not tunable. It just uses a low noise preamp that blew out one day. And I was very disappointed when I just tested it in my shack and basically heard nothing. When I took it outdoors, it was much, much better. But again, I'm dealing with the old plastering with the chicken wire and such, so I've kind of assumed that I live in a Faraday cage.
Me too. So, I guess that's it. Back to net. Thanks, Roy. Great time, and thanks to everybody in the net.
Very good, Bob. Once again, before I shut it all down tonight, anyone have any closing comments, questions, statements, what have you, for the technical net tonight? This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month. Our next meeting will be April 3rd. We offer a pre-meeting technical question and answer session, much like this. From 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. as time allows. Our regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on this repeater, as well as a 10-meter net every Sunday at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz of sideband. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. We have a weekly net featuring Yaesu's Fusion Digital Technology. That's every Thursday at 9 p.m. on our club repeater here, and a weekly swap and shop in digital fusion mode every Friday at 9 p.m. If you can communicate using fusion technology, please join in. We offer an audio stream of the FusionNet and the swap and shop on the Internet, as well as all audio transmissions of our club repeater at stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. As always, an application is readily available on our website. If you would like to contact the hosts of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.KingsCountyRadioClub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Free Alien Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time to pull this all up and shut this all down. But we'll be back to do it all over again April 10th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, and especially to my co-host, Gene KY2MY. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So, this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear, and getting the heck out of here. Until next time, guys, take it easy.
Roy, we're fortunate to have you. Kilo Charlie 2, Echo Kilo Echo.
Johnson.
Welcome. George here.